KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. And we have a great show today. We've got two very different topics. First hour, we are fortunate to have Commander Bruce Hay from Pacific Missile Range Facility. And in the second hour, I will have three different guests, and we'll be talking about creating free energy. And Kauai Soapbox was made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Store and Bikram Yoga.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostulas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Bikram Yoga Kauai, located in Kapa'a, provides authentic Bikram Yoga. A 90-minute beginner series is practiced in a heated studio with newly remodeled hot showers and changing rooms. All levels welcome. Improves physical health and overall well-being. Boutique open and classes available 7 days a week. KauaiBikramYoga.com or 823-9642.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So, Captain Bruce, are you on?
I am. How you having?
Really good. So I'm happy to have you in here, and we have Marshall taking the phone calls.
Aloha.
Aloha. So, and when you do call in, it will be at 808-826-7771. And Captain Bruce Hay was in here maybe a month ago, I would say. He's nodding. He's not used to radio. Yes?
Yes, on the 22nd of December, right before Christmas.
Okay, and we were talking about the environmental impact statement for, let me see if I got it right, Hawaii, Southern California Testing and Training.
Correct.
And that is what's coming up in 2018.
Correct. It was a scoping meeting and then a follow-up to garner public opinion and to solicit inputs for the process. And, you know, we kept talking about the website so people could make comments if they hadn't made it to the scoping meeting. So that was the purpose of coming. Plus, you had a whole slew of other people in here, which was awesome.
Yeah, we had a number of people in here. And so last time I brought in different people who represented perspectives that were concerned about the actions of the Navy on the Pacific. And it's supposed to be specifically between here and California. But so we had a number of different topics there, and you said, hey, I didn't hear enough callers from coming in. Can I come back in and hear from callers? And so I said yes. And then one thing I'd like to just call quick attention to, I don't want to say to get it out of the way, but at least to just shine a light on it, and then we can, move to the environmental impact statement. And so Reuters and then a number of other press things, I think Reuters is the one who broke the story, when they were looking at the National Defense Authorization Act for 2016, buried in a very huge document. That's the thing with the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization, is oftentimes it's a very huge piece buried deep within this. Even the table of contents is long. It did set out Pacific Missile Range Facility, where you do Aegis missile testing, that launcher has the potential to be utilized for live missiles. So that is something that people had a lot of concern about. I tried to look it up a little bit to see which people from our Senate and House at the U.S., because I know they make decisions like that, along with Ashton Carter, who is the current Secretary of Defense. So this is almost just one line in that document. So that might be something that comes up a little later in the show, but I want to just acknowledge that the purpose of the show is to allow you to allow callers to call in about that environmental impact statement.
Yeah, absolutely. So appreciate that. Again, really enjoyed coming up here last time. No, I don't get as much time on the east side of the island as I'd like, and Kauai is beautiful everywhere you go. Now, I solicited comments on the website hstteis.com, and I still encourage people to go there. The public comment period for the scoping phase is closed. It closed on the 12th of January, and all the comments from the different areas, there was scoping meetings done in San Diego and on Oahu and then here. And if you remember, we had the largest turnout of all those areas, which I thought was kind of interesting. San Diego, a metropolitan area, had about a third of the people we had. Regardless, that's going to get turned into a draft environmental impact statement. And then in spring of 2017, there'll be a 60-day comment period for the public to make comments on that. So if you go to that website, hstteis.com, again, and subscribe, and there's a giant button that says subscribe for updates, it'll prompt you when that comes out in spring 2017. And there's no firm date yet, but that'll, you know, it's only a year away. It'll go by faster than you might think. I'll give you 60 days, and I unfortunately won't be at the Pacific Missile Range facility then, but hopefully the new person, whoever that is, will come up here and encourage people to be part of that process as well. So
we got to talk to your bosses and help them to know how to fill those meetings. Because, like, if you come in early, like, we tried really hard with a moment's notice, like that day's notice, to get some people to the event down there in Lihue. And, you know, some people showed, I think, somewhat from this. But it is really important for people to engage.
Yeah, and those comments are all read and taken seriously. It means your ability to voice your concerns, and you know, we want to hear that. And we want the product to be valid. We want to balance what we have to do to protect national security with protecting the things that we all hold dear, the things that share the ocean with us. So please subscribe to that website. All they ask for is a name and an email, and then you'll get updates for when the public comment period opens up again in 2017. Spring. Again, the dates will be firmed up and they'll be published on that website.
So is it too late to comment? It's not too late to comment. I thought it was.
For the first phase, that period closed on the 12th of January.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So now they're going to take all the public comments plus all the other things that have to be done to update this document and put it to work, and then they'll publish a draft and allow people to comment on it for 60 days, again, in the spring of 2017. So depending on the breadth of comments, and you know, it could take a little bit longer, could be, take a little bit less, but again, hopefully people made the effort prior to the 12th of January to get those comments in, and if not, you're not out of luck. You still have opportunity to make those comments heard later. So please subscribe to that website, let your voice be heard.
So I'm looking at who all is listening. I can see who's out there. We have our usuals from Japan. Hello, Japan. But I do see people from each of the different islands. I see quite a bit from Honolulu and then Oahu and, Hawaii Island. I don't see Maui yet, but really any of the islands, anybody, anywhere can actually...
It's Hawaii and Southern California, and it's the spaces in between. If you go to the website, there's graphics. It's a pretty large amount of space, especially around Hawaii. The whole Hawaii training complex is a couple of million square miles that encompasses all the islands, primarily west of here. But again, if you live in Hawaii, hstteis.com, subscribe for the updates. So in spring of 2017, you can go on and make your comments and influence that process.
And so when I see also we have listeners in here even from Turkey, but we certainly have even, do you know Mount Vernon, Washington?
I was stationed at Whidbey Island Naval Air Station up in Puget Sound, and Mount Vernon is the town kind of northeast of there. So maybe it's one of my friends, but I doubt it because I didn't tell everyone I was coming on the show.
You got a couple people from that area. So... This, and people can call in from anywhere to 808-826-7771. And
what's that toll-free number, Felicia?
We had to switch phone companies because they couldn't fix our phone lines, so we no longer have a toll-free number.
Oh.
So I was going to say that, but I can't. We don't have it anymore. Sorry. But most people don't pay for long distance anymore anyway. So 808-826-7771. Last time that you were in here, because I have gotten several messages from one of the guests who was in here, there was a commitment to be making an effort to have the Navy scientists and then I was like Terry Lilly's scientists, because he's got a lot of people who are involved in this discussion with him. That meeting hasn't happened. Is that correct?
No. We've traded some emails, and I told him that I have to work through Navy channels. It would appear that we're going to do a small group meeting here.
On Kauai?
On Kauai. I did have some concerns initially. It might be on Oahu, and that's not very satisfying. So I won't go into all the detail of things that have to be accomplished, but it'll be a small group meeting. It won't be open to the public, and it'll be scientists from both sides, and they can get their science on, for lack of a better term, and address concerns and hopefully understand where both sides are coming from. And what happens after that, I don't know, but still our intent. And I'm going over to Oahu tomorrow for unrelated business, and on Thursday I'm meeting with some of my environmental lawyer team colleagues over there to discuss the same. So it's still going to happen, more than likely going to be here, small group forum, won't be public. And that way, there are no distractions. Scientists can go straight to the science and address those things.
And then, so will we be able to say which scientists attend? Is there any kind of way that, like, I can keep the heat off of me? I'm just being selfish here. Like that I am seeing some follow through on what has been.
Yeah, absolutely. We haven't gotten that far, to be perfectly honest with you. On my side, looking at reef science in particular, so marine biologists. My team on PMRF is awesome, but I don't have a reef biologist. Those are on Oahu. So, again, got to get the right people, so it's a satisfying meeting.
Okay, and I think we've got a caller, and when we're done with that, some people send me different things, so these don't look like our kind of whales right here, but we're seeing what's called a whale call, NWTT, if that means anything to you. Okay, we got a caller. I'll take it, and then we can talk about that. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it?
Good,
can
Matt.
Can you guys hear me okay?
I can.
Yeah, so I went to that meeting that I saw you had at the Island School with the Navy.
Yes.
And one of the things that I brought up with them is that, you know, you can have the science argument, is sonar and radar affecting the reefs and the impact of the ecosystem, or is it not? But what I told them was that there are multiple stressors affecting our coastal shorelines and ecosystem, and that if they want to use our area, and they claim it's so vital, that they should put the Navy's resources in behind putting wastewater treatment on that site. Because although I do believe sonar and radar is affecting reefs and its vitality, I do also believe it's only because there's a lot of stressors from water pH to water temperature to the plastic in the ocean affecting the hormones of the polyps. And it's obviously runoff from Hanalei and all the septics and all of the natural runoff and from golf courses and whatnot. So if we could work on some of the known stressors, maybe some of the symptoms would reduce.
So,
and it's funny because a civilian scientist got into a debate, and the brass you were really responsive to it, because when you guys sit down at these two meetings between scientists, I think we need to have the PR for the Navy in there as well, because they want to do good by the community. They don't want to be known as the guys doing the wrong thing.
So
they could put some resources into some other stressor. Unknown stressor.
Matt,
Yes.
Am I hearing you correctly? And correct me if I'm wrong. It sounds like you're asking the Navy to put in sewer systems for the island. Is that what you're asking?
Well, not the island, but the affected reefs that are out on the North Shore.
So you're asking for sewers on the North Shore?
I did actually ask them. You're right. I did.
Okay, I just was trying to cut to the chase of what you were really asking. Make sure you speak right into your phone. So you were asking, the word resources, but that sounded to me like you're saying, get us some sewers.
What I mean by resources is the Navy, by default, goes into other places in the world, not the country. And they put desalination plants and they put sewers and they do these types of things. This is the things they do. And it's not just all battles, right? And so I've been in two branches of the service, to be honest with you. And so when I talked to them that night, right, I'll be honest, the civilian guys, they didn't seem as plausible. But the brass in the back listening to me talk to the guys as we went through all those little micro stations, how you remember how they had it all set up?
Yes.
Started on one side and you went through the micro station. Then I said the same thing to every station. To Larissa, one big guy that kind of got into an actual, like, well, that's not realistic, and this, that. So I decided to debate my points with him, and that's when the brass came over and took over the conversation. And they said, yeah, we need you to write that in. And I'd already wrote something along the lines, very short, because they had the paper to write out. And I didn't get time to write back by the 12th, I believe it was. But, you know, if we're going to have this conversation, and the Navy wants to use this training facility and not go out in pelagic waters where the migratory schools in whales will be, yeah, impacted, but at a way lesser rate, you know, not to mention the coral coastline, then they need to step up to the plate. If they want to sail here and use the range, let's reduce some stressors. And what is a known stressor? Right now, we know that there's no infrastructure in Kilauea and Hanalei for wastewater treatment.
Okay, so
why not have the Navy?
You don't have to get off the phone, but let me give Captain Bruce a chance to respond to that. What's your reaction to that? Somebody saying, hey, put in sewers.
He's referencing his community relation projects, and when a ship pulls in, there'll be a large call for volunteers to do many things. I was in Surabaya, Indonesia, and the Seabees were building schools. Construction battalion sailors,
okay.
So the people in the Navy who build things. And had a little girl come up to me and kiss my hand, and it took every bit of gumption I had not to cry in front of her, because she was kissing me only because I was an American and they were building this a school. And it wasn't, you know, Carnegie Mellon. It was just a basic structure. And so I hear what you're saying. If we're doing these community relations projects, why aren't we doing them in the continental United States or American territories? I don't have a good answer for you, but I did write it down because I hear what you're saying, and I understand the dichotomy in people's mind there. So been on them. They're powerful. And, you know, I wrote it down. I don't know what will come of it, but thanks for asking.
So just so I can be clear, in case somebody else wants to say the same thing, having Seabees or construction battalions do, you say community relations?
Yeah, actually, ironically.
Another acronym.
Yeah, it's...
I would like to throw out one thing. I was in the Army and the Coast Guard, and in the Army, I was an engineer. So as you have the Seabees for the Navy, there are other branches of the service, like my unit that I actually joined after MET, but I did not because of MET. My unit was a guard unit, which is the Army, that came over here, and they were activated. And while I was in that unit, we were activated to go. I've been to Kona and done, you know, projects for the state on the state level. And so if you guys coordinate on your side, I'm pretty sure we could get it done. And I'm just saying, for your PR, if you want to really be Pono with us and live side by side while protecting us and not protecting us at the cost of our civil liberties and the cost of our ecosystem, then I think you guys should step up and really, really sit down with your brass and contemplate this route, because I think this is the middle ground and you'll gain a lot of support. Thank you very much. Aloha.
Aloha. And hey. We have...
Yeah, the construction battalion, if you're a John Wayne fan, there's a movie called The Fighting Seabees that I think they're all required to watch when they join the Navy. And interestingly enough, a lot of the facilities at PMRF were built by Seabees over the decades. There's something called Title 10 that the active duty forces have to abide by, and talks about where you can employ things, et cetera, et cetera. So what he's talking about is, again, interesting topic, but probably better addressed to the guard people. But again, I wrote it down. It's a great question.
Okay. So I'm going to take the next call. Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hello. This is Ann Wright. I'm a retired Army colonel from living over on Oahu, and was on your show week before last.
Colonel Ann Wright. All right. Yes.
Yes. I would like to ask, is it Commander Bruce Hay or Captain Bruce Hay?
I'm a captain and commander of the range, but they use them interchangeably here. It doesn't matter. I'm Bruce.
You're Bruce. Okay, well, I'm Ann. I wanted to ask you about the news that Felicia had mentioned before, the Reuters report about the missile range perhaps becoming as they termed it, an offensive range, not just doing testing, but actually being a range that would fire missiles, say, at North Korea or China or something like that. I'm very concerned about the continued militarization of the various islands of Hawaii, and that's coming from a 29-year veteran of the U.S. military. It seems to me like we have plenty of places where we can shoot missiles right now, and I personally don't think that Kauai needs to be added to the list, but I'd sure like to get your opinion on all of that. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. So I sent Felicia some stuff, and she mentioned it earlier. The article is a sensationalization of something that's clearly written in a congressional act called the National Defense Authorization Act, and you're probably familiar. Being 29 years, it's how we get our money, tells us how to spend it. So buried in there in Section 1689, there, you can find this at congress.gov and then further dig down to NDAA 16 or 2016. Again, Section 1689. Report on medium-range ballistic missile defense sensor alternatives for enhanced defense of Hawaii. And it asks, it's a sense of Congress that there, talks about why they think that this should happen. And then Section 1 says, evaluation. The director of the Missile Defense Agency shall conduct an evaluation of potential options for fielding a medium-range ballistic missile defense sensor for the defense of Hawaii, including A is the use of the Aegis Ashore Missile Defense Test Complex, land-based system at the Pacific Missile Range Facility, B, the use of existing sensors in the region, and other options the director deems determines appropriate. That happened. It was a report to the elected officials this fall. Somehow that got turned into, you know, we're going to be launching offensive weapons. That's not the case for a test and training range. You'll notice in that article nowhere is their input from the Pacific Missile Range Facility where we do test and training, or Pacific Fleet Range. There's no input from the Pacific Fleet, et cetera, et cetera. It's a sensationalization. They take this language from Congress that told the Missile Defense Agency to look at some options and turned it into, you know, hypotheticals. It was surprising to me as well. So, and when I read it, I go, wow, that's going to be interpreted only one way, and that's how it has been as far as we can see in blogs and stuff. Again, it was homework that Congress gave the Missile Defense Agency. That facility just happens to be on our base. It's a test and training asset, and it's going to continue to be test and training. That's what we do. That's why the range exists. That's why we're special and different from other ranges in the Department of Defense. So, again, if you read it after you go and look at NDA 16 and some other things and look at that article again, you'll read it completely differently. So I hope that answered your question.
And, Ann, are you still on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And did you have another thing you wanted to share?
Well, I'm glad that Captain Hay gave us that clarification, and I certainly think it would probably be a good move that somebody in Department of Defense kind of counter the article, because it certainly has caused a lot of questioning and concern here in the Hawaiian Islands, and I would think in various groups on the mainland too. We certainly are concerned about the Aegis defense system and the missile defense system of the United States and the deployment of it, which it can be interpreted by the Chinese and the North Koreans as offensive work by the United States. The U.S. considers it defensive, and others consider it as a threat to them. So I think it is very wise to counter these things, and I personally hope that we control much more the deployment of all of these missile systems, because I think it, rather than providing our national security, I think in some ways it may be jeopardizing it. So thank you very much, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak. Thank you.
Thank you. And I believe we have another caller. Thank you so much for holding. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. This is Terry Lilly. Hey, Bruce. Thank you very much for coming on the show. Yeah, thanks for your explanation about turning the base to an active level. I think that was a big concern for all of us, and I think that's why these shows are so important, for you to be able to get and speak the truth on what's going on. So anyway, I just want to thank you again for following up on getting together with the group of scientists, and I believe that'll happen, and I believe it will probably do a really good thing for all of us. I just have two real quick questions. One of them is more of a technical question. I know that you already have in your program boats that, I think you call them whale spotters, that when you're out doing your military exercises, that you're looking for whales and dolphin. If you find them in the area, then you either move the exercises or stop them. So first question is, we have only the last few remaining hawksbill turtles anywhere in the Pacific Ocean. Here on the North Shore of Kauai, I've documented a couple. There's only supposed to be 100 left alive here in Hawaii. And they do tend to swim right through the militarized zone off of the base. Do you have any active program when you're out there, you know, with the operations, of paying attention to the movement of these endangered sea turtles so we can protect the last few that we have? So first question. And then just second question is, Brian Schatz, put in, or I don't know the exact wording of it, but he got $30 million for the base to up their electronic grid. Is there an active program right now where you folks are actually stepping up the amount of electronics and sonar you're using? Or is that something that's primarily kept level at this point in time? And then I'll get off the air and just let you talk.
All right. Well, Happy New Year. I'll address the second question first. $30.89 million was mentioned in the president's budget for 2016. That has nothing to do with powering things. It's the ability to move power around, and ultimately will allow us to take advantage of green energy. The base was built up over decades, and if you've come out there and had the tour and listened, you know, it was a grass strip for cacao, sugar company, et cetera. No one envisioned in the 1930s and 40s that we'd still be doing what we're doing today. And the electrical system has four feeder lines. The power actually goes out to the old Mana substation and is back routed. So that $30.8 million allows us to consolidate that grid so we can take advantage of green energy. We have about a megawatt of installed photovoltaic right now that we can't move to where it needs to be used, so I'm only taking advantage of about two-thirds of it. Once that comes online, that allows us to use more photovoltaic. When the county starts capping the landfill, take advantage of landfill gas. There's all kinds of options, and ultimately it will reduce the amount of money we spend on electricity. So, again, it has nothing to do with powering systems, which right now we've got everything we're going to have. Then lastly, the turtle issue. So there's no near shore training done. I don't know how far out turtles swim, but the things that would be affected during exercises with ships or use spotters and stuff are typically well beyond the horizon. So nothing near shore, because we don't do near shore stuff.
Are you still there, Terry? Okay. All right. Aloha, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Here.
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
I can.
Cannot?
I can. You're on the air.
Okay, well, I'm just checking. Okay, now, I'm very lucky to have an opportunity to speak with you, Captain. I remember when you first came on the base, there was an interview, and they asked you what your job was, and you said, one of my biggest jobs is to bring in business, so to speak, that is, users of the facility. Do you remember that?
Yeah, absolutely. In my remarks, I said our relevancy would be tied to our demand, essentially.
Well, in that regard, I was thinking back to World War II. I'm an old-timer. I was here for Pearl Harbor and Burnsfield when the Sikorsky that flew between the islands was shot up at Pearl Harbor or Hickam or Honolulu Airport, and the war started then, so I got to grow up during the war here. And one thing that happened to our benefit was they closed down the little airport at Burnsfield and Port Allen and opened the base at Barking Sands. And so we had a joint military civil aviation facility. And of course the military were operating with loaded ammunition, airplanes and what have you. And we were flying, well, we went from the old Sikorsky, we went to the Goonie Bird, which is also known as the DC-3. And so, we went to a modern airplane and we were able to operate Inner Island. Some of us were going to school in Honolulu. So, well, of course they whited out all the windows so you couldn't see the 155s being built along the shoreline. So question came up in my mind, why not reconsider aviation on a limited basis? Airline operations out of Barking Sands, out of PMRF, such things as, well, Island Air. They have that ATR 71. Would that be a possibility at all?
Well, thank you for that question. We have some great pictures. If you come on base at show when before Lihue Airport was built, when the old Hawaiian Airline DC-3s operated, that day, unfortunately, is long in the past with the availability of air services at Lihue, Port Allen, Princeville, some other places. That was not something that we're going to be branching out into. I envy your experiences. It sounds like you had a very awesome and colorful life, so thank you for that call.
Well, can I ask you one more question?
Yeah, absolutely.
What if we had the Google boys want to fly out here, but they don't want to land at Lihue? Is the possibility that those kind of people could land special permission with your blessing?
There are mechanisms for that, and it's usually tied to some kind of Department of Defense or a federal entity. So if it was in support of something like that, absolutely.
Okay. Now, not a question, but a comment. You know all about EMP.
Tell us what is EMP. What is EMP?
Well, EMP stands for electromagnetic pulse.
And okay.
What happens if a nuclear device is exploded at altitude of 20 to 40 to 80 miles? It produces a secondary pulse. Well, the first one is the it produces a blast, which produces then an electromagnetic pulse, which will fry every bit of electronic gear within range. And so Dr. Peter Vincent Pry and Frank Gather and all these people have been trying to have the government protect against such a thing. And the one thing that came out as the only unprotected area in the United States is from the Gulf of Mexico. And so the comment came in, we could install an Aegis system on the ground. Now, what I gather is that you have such an Aegis system on the ground, you don't have to operate it from the ship. So if someone was going to EMP us, i.e. North Korea, you would have the Aegis to shoot it down before it got here. If it was down in the Gulf and they had an Aegis, and they don't have it yet. Can you comment on that?
One, I'm not an expert on EMP, so I'm not going to talk to that, but what you're suggesting, their ship's more than capable of doing that. The only test facility that we have is here in Hawaii. The other two facilities like it are actual operational facilities in Romania and Poland. We have Navy ships and other systems that would defend against threats, and we could go what if forever and ever.
So I want to just ask a novice question. And by the way, you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox, Commander Bruce Hay from Pacific Missile Range Facilities on the phone with us. Aegis missiles are normally come out of a ship, right?
Correct. Aegis is the name of the combat weapon system. So that's means shield in Greek. It's a system of radars and missiles and guns, et cetera. So that's the system that would detect threats, and then it's engaged with a gun or a missile. But the Aegis is the entire suite of systems.
It's not just that. Okay, and caller, thank you so much. I have a few on hold behind you. Do you have a final thought?
Thank you very much for the comments, and I should talk to you again sometime, Captain.
Yes, sir. Have a nice day.
Mahalo.
Aloha. And thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Hey, Bruce. This is Terry Lilly just calling back. Your comment about not doing any nearshore operations on July 13th, 2014, I have video during RIMPAC of one of your warships only a half mile offshore from Tunnels Beach. And at the same time, during that several-week period of time, I documented over 26 turtles there that appeared to have their flippers blown off. And I documented all this with high-def video. I've supplied it to Earth Justice for the use in court. And so when you're saying there's no nearshore operations, and then last time when we were on the air, you said there's going to be another RIMPAC coming up this summer, and your quote is it's going to be run just like the last RIMPAC. So how can you claim there's no nearshore operations when we have video underwater, the boats, and the turtle damage?
Yeah, absolutely. So transiting ships are not doing what you're talking about. They're coming from other places. The ships and airplanes and forces that come from RIMPAC travel from all over the Pacific Ocean, North America, et cetera. And one of the transit routes from Oahu is via the North Shore. We have very strict rules about proximity to land and what systems we can use. When I was operations officer on the United States ship Nimitz, an aircraft carrier, I could tell you how far we had to be before you could bring up certain radars, et cetera. So transiting? Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure they were transiting. All the live fire activities that, you know, I'd have to go back and look at the calendar, but nothing happens near shore, period. So,
well, then that's something I think that we need to probably debate at a higher level, maybe in a federal courtroom, because we actually have pictures of blasting going off these ships where you could see explosives going into the water. You could see plumes of water going up in the air. And during this period of time is when all of these turtles had this damage. Nowhere in the past history of Kauai has NOAA and the USGS, by the way, they came over and did a study with me on this. Nowhere in the past history has anyone documented turtle damage like this. And soon as RIMPAC was over with and these boats left, no turtles since then have been damaged like this. So this is kind of pretty much irrefutable evidence that hopefully will show up in a courtroom here. And I just have a huge concern because we have 100 Hawksbill turtles left in all of Hawaii. They're ready to go extinct, and they're swimming right through our local area here. If you guys do RIMPAC again, like you said, in the same format that you did last time, then I'm going to be out there expecting to see the same kind of damage. I mean, this is really a big concern, especially under the, you know, Endangered Species Act and the coastline now be declared critical habitat for the monk seal. So anyway, I hope this is something we can address with the scientist, and I'll show the data in the movies so you can review them yourself if you would like.
All right, I look forward to that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. Have a great one.
Thank you. So that's a lot that was just said there. Turtles and hawksbill turtles, maybe write hawksbill turtles down. 100, I didn't know that the number had gotten that low. It looks like we have another caller. Aloha, caller. You're on the air. And turn your radio off, please.
Okay, how about now?
Good.
Aloha.
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 Aloha, Commander. My name is Poonani Rogers. I live in the Aupua of Kealia. And I'm a Kanaka Maoli who has ancestors buried in the Nohili Dunes.
Auntie, are you able to speak into the phone better? Are you on speaker phone?
Yes, I was.
Okay, maybe go right on directly into the phone so we can hear you better.
All right. Right now, how's that?
Better.
Okay, my question is, what are they doing to protect and preserve any of our cultural sites, the dunes, and as well as Kaula Island?
Okay, thank you for your call. So the Nohili Dune, when you come on base and we give a tour, we talk out, that's one of the last remaining dunes in all of Hawaii, and you know, a lot of them have been leveled.
Very famous and very sacred.
Yeah, absolutely, and I totally understand that. The National Hula Competition, when they were out here last summer, came and asked to dance in the dunes, et cetera. Our intention is not to do anything that hasn't already been done. So the structures that are there are going to stay, but nothing else is going to happen there. There's no requirement to. When we do clearing at other areas on the base, we have to get an archaeologist, et cetera, to make sure that we're taking into account the fact that there might be cultural or things of significance to people. So, so we take that extremely seriously, and I'll give you a great example. West of the runway, there's vegetation there that is supposed to be trimmed. And I know that that's an extension of the dune south. And I've asked for waivers for the last couple of years so that we don't trim that and we accept the risk of airplane going off the runway and potentially hitting that, because I know it's sensitive to people there. So believe me, I take that extremely seriously, and I understand your concern, and as do the people on the base.
I appreciate that you are paying attention to that. I was wondering, would you allow us some time to go in to do some cultural ceremonies?
My new public affairs officer was supposed to be here with me. He just moved here from Japan. He may not have made the turns.
He might have got lost,
but his telephone number is 335-4740. That's the public affairs officer. So again, 335-4740. That's a public affairs officer for the Pacific Missile Range Facility. Please.
What's his name?
Robert Purdy.
Okay. And I'm writing it down, Auntie, too.
So please call him. And we do things like that all the time, and we'd be honored to. Thank you.
What about Kaula Island? It's not Kaula Rock. We call it Kaula Island.
Yeah, absolutely. That is not part of the Pacific Missile Range Facility. It's closer to us, so people assume, but it's scheduled and controlled through Oahu, unfortunately. So if you contact Felicia, we can get you contacts to talk to people over there about addressing that concern, but that's not in my, under my purview.
Okay. Mahalo so much. Mahalo, Felicia.
Yes, and have you ever gone for a tour of the base?
I tried, but you got to go get a permit or something.
Well, Captain, how can she get a tour of the base? I mean, what's the right step for her or anybody?
Call Robert.
Okay.
Our public affairs officer. So we do events all the time, schools, public groups. I said the National Hula Competition was out there. Call Robert.
And it might be her halau or her cultural practitioning group can come as a cohesive force, and so it is a group together, and it's not mixed up with people with a varying interest. So they can have a focused interest and see these places. And all right, does that sound good to you, Auntie?
Yeah, please call Robert.
Okay.
And I will help you if you need any help.
All right, thanks.
All right, mahalo.
Okay, mahalo.
Okay, mahalo. And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. We have Captain Bruce Hay, Commander from the Pacific Missile Range Facility, in here. He came in to talk story and hear calls. He didn't feel like he got enough direct calls. So I really want to commend you for making an effort to hear the people. And so people can call in to 808-826-7771. And if they want to go right onto the website, it's HSTT, like Hawaii. It's usually just goes HSC. There's no C in there.
Nope, HSTTEIS.com.
So there's no dot between the TT and
nope,
the EIS.
All one word.
HSTTEIS.com.
Go to the on the left side are all the buttons for documents, schedule, etc. on the bottom, and says subscribe for updates. So just click on that, ask for your name and an email address, and that's it.
Okay, and then I've been trying to do some research on these things, and I do own that there's a lot of information, and it's hard to really put it all together. I've been looking at John Bowen, who was here last time. He has sent me a number of articles. Darlene Ketten was one of these authors. The article is called Sonars and Strandings, Are Beaked Whales the Aquatic Acoustic Canary? I've been looking at, you know, it says yes, basically. You know, the article says that it, you know, that there is at least some reason to believe that the sonar is impacting that. And then other people have sent me a bunch of stranded whale pictures recently in California. But I think we identify the fastest with the whales because they're a big, amazing, conscious being that causes people's attention here. I'll let you answer that in a minute, but I got a caller, so I want to take that first. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for holding.
Aloha. I would like to ask the commander about HARP. If he could explain to us a little bit about how the HARP program works at the base, and also if he could shed any light on the chemtrails.
Or that would be the aerial spraying, the geoengineering. Is that what you mean with the chemtrails?
Yes.
Okay, so HARP, that's...
I'm not familiar with that term.
HARP is a military term. It's high oral... I got to look it up. Do you remember what that stands for, HARP? I'm not an acronym person.
No, not at the moment.
High Frequency Aerial Oral Research Program. And that is by the Navy and the U.S. Air Force. I'm looking at Wikipedia. And it's also between the University of Alaska and the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency.
DARPA. I'm not familiar with the HARP. So I can't speak to that. But what was the other question, please?
Chemtrails.
So, not familiar with that except for what I see, you know, posted on Facebook. We don't do anything like that at PMRF or the Navy that I've ever done. But, again, I'm not an expert. I've only read the same things that people do, clever Photoshop, so...
Well, I want to stop you there just a moment because, like, then you'll lose credibility with the audience because what does happen, and when you see it on Facebook, it's not clever stuff. Like, people will go, oh, and they'll look out, and people start taking shots of it, and it'll come out in the morning, and it's somebody in Hyena, and then people will take it as it's coming over Princeville and coming over Kilauea, and then pictures are taken over the whole day, and we will see... by the end of the day that we have a silvery, milky sky when it was otherwise blue. And from these pictures over time, it's just undeniable that something is happening as the result of what is coming out of the back of these planes. And so when people say, oh, no, it's in your head, you know, we've got to kind of stop
that.
It might be you haven't noticed it, but I will tell you it is heavily noticed. And we're not on the flight path of that many things. We don't have that many commercial airplanes coming, and typically they're a little bit low.
Oh, okay. So.
But you don't know.
And I know what do we fly at the Pacific Missile Range facility. I know what I flew in the Navy, and that's not anything that we do. Never trained. Again, I'm not. I'm not going to speculate. So again.
Okay, because even the weather people on, you know, television. Although we've, like, when we did see this stuff about the Aegis missiles from PMRF, that's been on Hawaii News Now. And, you know, one news agency brings it up, then everybody reacts to it. Everybody sees it. It's, you know, people have a trust issue. With this stuff going on in the sky, might not be you, but somehow something is happening. And when I think that people will, are you okay, caller, that I'm jumping in on this story a little bit? Because this is something that I field a lot, and people bring it to me, and they'll say, go outside and look. And then I go outside and look, and there you'll see a contrail in the same sky as what people will call a chemtrail. Now, they might be in different heights above the Earth, but not, you know, it's like, oh, and then I've had called and then gone out and sat there and watched and see the crazy electrical storm that happens at night. Like one of them, the sky pulsed for about a half hour in the same area, and there was three of us on the phone together watching it. And so people get nervous about that, and we had hail landing on the beach in Kapaa in that same window, and there were water spouts in Oahu coming up to the beach, you know. So there is something crazy going on with the weather system, and so people, they don't know what it is. And so when we hear HAARP or when we see it coinciding with this plane behavior, and people will call the Federal Aviation Administration, and they don't have a record. And then you just kind of go, how can you not have a record? Those planes were in the sky. No, those planes weren't in the, or we don't have no record. So if nobody has a record, you would think PMRF, you're designed to be able to see what's going on in the sky, right?
Yeah, when we're actually doing activities, that electricity is expensive here. So the time that we have equipment on is when we're actually testing or training. And when I was here last time, we talked about contrails, and certain airplanes have detection on the wings because you don't want to be able to inadvertently highlight yourself. Then you don't need radar or anything fancy to be detected. So, but contrails and chemtrails are completely different. They sound similar. Again, we don't have anything capable of doing that at PMRF, and all the airplanes that flew in the Navy don't either.
Okay, well, that word chemtrail, I think, is a colloquialism. It's normally goes under aerial spraying or geoengineering. But maybe sometime in the future, even after when you retire, it would be really nice to bring you in here with the scientists who come who talk about it. Because my job as being a facilitator of the conversation, I'm no expert. But what I do see is when people are going, go out and look in the sky. I go out and look in the sky, and, you know, some of what we're seeing is undeniably unusual, though it becomes too usual, so people really get worried about it. Caller, I know I jumped all over your topic. Do you have something more to say? Well, you don't have a good connection to, is why I kind of clarified.
No, that's good. I just would hope that our military leaders would have a concern about the people. And I know that we want to defend us from all of our enemies, because America seems to have so many enemies. But at the same time, we want to take care of the people. And since the commander is also a part of the people, I just hope that in his, you know, that he can, that he'll do the right thing at all times.
Okay, so he can write that on his list. I'll watch him write. Okay, he did write it on his list. I want to see it on the list. Okay, so thank you so much, caller. I know I have one more person. Oh, he left? Okay. All right. So thank you so much. Aloha. So, Commander, I know you have to be someplace.
I'm going to get locked in by the gate.
You're going to get locked in by the gate. So you have about 3 or 4 minutes to give us your mana'o. What do you want to say to any of the listeners? And I have to just say I really appreciate you, and I like your personal energy. You seem like a person who's very sincere and very approachable. Yes, right? You are. So I appreciate you. So I wouldn't say it if it wasn't true.
Well, thank you for having me up here. You know, it's important for people have concerns to voice those, and we've talked about some of the ways to do that. And I appreciate the dialogue so that stories that are sensationalized can be desensationalized and we can get to the truth. So, and you know how to get a hold of me at any time. And if it's not something I'm an expert on or something I can resolve, then, you know, I'll tell you that's straightforward. I encourage people to come out to the west side, especially those of you who live up here on the beautiful North Shore. You know, it's like a whole other world over there. And in particular, please join us on the 3rd of July. That's an open base event where we celebrate our the birth day of our nation. It's not on the 4th, so we deconflict with the kickoff community and then the hospice fundraiser. But open base, come see the beautiful west side, partake in our nation's birthday. There's live music. Last year we had Dishwalla. And pay attention to the Garden Isle because we publicize open base events like the Magic Concert that just happened.
Oh, it happened already?
Okay. Yeah, that was 3,000 people or so on the 17th, which was, no pun intended, magical. We got to see Green Flash. It was a spectacular sunset and, you know, listen to a band that and see all the young people drive out there, too. So, again, appreciate the opportunity to come and talk a story here. And I got my homework here.
He did take a list.
So, again, I'm paying attention. And, thank you for listening.
Okay. Thank you so much, Captain Hay, and aloha. And, Marshall, you'll make sure he's able to do whatever he needs to do to get out. So, Marshall's in here. Hey, Marshall, you can say hi.
Hey, aloha.
Aloha. So, aloha, Captain Hay. And I have some more people in the studio, and I want to get their voices on. And so I need you right up next to the mic. And you might move over to this one because it's a nicer mic. So I have Richard Kraft.
Aloha.
All right, let me see. That didn't come out too strong. Try again.
Aloha.
Okay, that Richard Kraft is in here. And Lita, let's have you say hello into Mike.
Aloha.
Aloha. So I have two softly spoken people. I'm going to try and encourage you to speak strongly into the mic. We do have another caller, and it looks like your compatriot. Aloha, you're on the air. Is this Michael?
Yes, it is. This is Mike.
Hi, Mike. I'm glad to have you in here. We are going to start.
How are you doing today, Felicia?
I'm doing really well, and I am going to be taking your guys' workshop. And just so people know, whenever I learn about these workshops, oftentimes my goal is to participate in them, and I always do. When there is, this has got a minimal compensation. We can't speak about dollars in this studio, but I do always contribute the required amount. So can you tell us the name? I'm going to say Lita. Lita, what tell us the name of this
workshop. Yeah, this is Koi's first ever plasma energy workshop. And we're going to be teaching plasma energy, showing what that means, what the applications are, and showing locals how we can advance as humanity.
Okay, and Richard, when I think plasma energy, I want to use the terms together, free energy, is that correct?
Yeah, I would think that it goes under a lot of terms now. I'm a very newcomer in this. I found out about it only about probably a month and a half ago, and I'm completely passionate in it. I've never even spoken to Michael. I just heard his voice right this second.
It's nice to meet you, Richard.
Hi, Michael. And when we talk about free energy, we're talking about the energy that's available everywhere around us and how we can bring that into our daily lives in all different types of forms, whether that be electricity in the current system in which we're functioning in, and water purification, the functions of gasoline explosion motors, healing, health, agriculture. There's a multiple of usages, and I think Michael and Lita will be able to speak much more in detail about it.
Okay, and we are just about up at the top of the hour, so before we go deep into this topic, I would like to really honor our underwriters that allow a program like this to be on the air. Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com or 639-3456.
This is Jennifer Wipa, park ranger at Kilauea Point National Wildlife Refuge and home of the Daniel K. Inouye Kilauea Point Lighthouse. We want to let everyone know that the refuge, lighthouse, and nature store will be closed January 19th through April 30th. We will do our best to reduce the length of closure, but addressing erosion, undermining, and settling that are occurring along the pathway to the point is critical for public safety and visitation. We appreciate your patience and understanding. Mahalo.
The quarterly meeting of the Kekahu Foundation Board of Directors will be Wednesday, January 27th, 6 p.m. at the Kapaa Neighborhood Center. The public is invited to attend, and for more information, call Steve at 652-3706.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Okay, so we have the time now to really, really address this. So, Michael, if you speak real directly into your phone, I would like to have you tell us what you come to teach when you're over here.
Sure. First, I just want to let you know I'm having a little difficulty on my end. It's kind of staticky. The voices of Richard and Lita are kind of low, so...
They need to learn to speak loud. They'll speak louder into their mics. Okay, so go on.
So I'd like to just really start off, kind of introduce myself. You know, my name is Mike Nashif. I was born in Oregon. I moved to Texas about 20 years ago, and I joined the military. I did two tours in Iraq and came home with PTSD and traumatic brain injury. I'm considered 100% disabled. The military doesn't want me to work or basically interact with the public because, you know, they felt like I was a threat because I had PTSD at some point. And during my early retirement, I, you know, went through a bunch of depression, times of self-reflection and things like that. And I remember complaining to my wife about the situation that our planet is in, the people, you know, not just, you know, other countries, but America. And, you know, the times of war make you think of how much you love your country and the people and things like that. You get your camaraderie. And we've buried our friends and, you know, we've all got our secrets in that kind of a world that we used to live in. And, you know, when I was complaining to my wife, she finally got fed up and she looked at me and says, "What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it?" And here we are. I'm about to put on a workshop in Kauai, Hawaii, so that we can teach self-sustainability, okay, where we're going to learn a new technology or a new understanding of how plasma energy works. And it's the same energy that Nikola Tesla was working with. We work closely with the Keshe Foundation and their ties. They've done all the technical testing. They have all of the equipment and things like that for the testing of the new devices that we're all making and with our new understandings. And what we're offering with this workshop is we're going to teach you how to use everyday household products to produce energy in your home. And I don't like the term free energy because nothing's ever free. And it becomes free because you don't have to pay for it. All right, and it'll start out as a reduced energy bill, and eventually you'll end up not paying for anything, and you'll be able to disconnect from the grid system if, you know, you're connected and you have these, you know, high energy bills like, you know, the commander was just talking about, how electricity is so expensive. And, you know, it's not just electricity, it's health and well-being and agriculture of learning how to undo genetically modified organisms back to their natural state. So we get to, you know, we don't have the threat of a GMO society anymore. And the people are speaking out, you know, against Monsanto and, you know, these other big corporations about this. You know, big things in the news like, you know, cancer remedies using, you know, marijuana, things like that, okay? Well, we use all of that type of energy, but we are able to extract it from the plants and use it so that it lasts forever. And that's what we're going to teach you how to do in this workshop, is to tap into that unlimited energy source that we have around us all the time. It's always there. And that's the goal with this, is to teach sustainability and how to decontaminate your water and how to allow your plants to grow freely and, you know, learn to communicate is really what it's going to boil down to.
So when I take this class or when anybody takes this workshop, are we physically building something that's going to actually produce energy?
Yes. We're going to be teaching how to make the Quad Core Infinity. All right, this is the Hawaii trip is, I believe, going to be the kickoff for what we've been deemed as the Infinity Project, the Infinity 888 Project, and it's just the starting point. It's the beginning point of sharing the vast amount of knowledge that I have acquired and learned and brought together in my understanding. You know, and the combined efforts of all of the knowledge seekers that are out there. And the culmination of that is this workshop.
So at a pragmatic level, and I notice this is a very, very reasonable cost, so I figure that's probably cost and materials and maybe contributing a little bit to getting you over here. When we go in and it looks like it's a three-day workshop, basically, not a tremendous amount of hours each day, but that there's a three-day workshop. And so when we're done, just being real pragmatic, is there something that puts out usable power? I'm like, when I'm thinking about this, I'm going, all right, are my friends who are without housing going to be able to see, this might make a difference in my life where I can charge my phone? Or, I mean, is it more abstract, or is it more nuts and bolts kind of thing?
Well, it's more about twisting wires. If you have copper wire in your house in a room that you're not using, you can pull it out of the wall. You need about 25 feet of it, and you can use that very same wire to produce the energy that you would need to live. What we're offering here is complete independence, and we're going to offer you a unique way to look at this new technology, and I'll teach you how it moves and how it interacts with itself and how you create a more powerful energy to help with things like, you know, in different configurations, you know, obviously more than 25 feet of wire here. When you use different configurations of these MagGrav systems, okay, magnetical gravitational systems, they allow different aspects of your needs. If you're fluent enough in this, you can learn how to create something that could fly, or you could just touch one of these coils, and the energy that's coming out of it will feed your body, and it will bring balance back into your body. Because currently, the way that the health system works, all of that is that it's designed to the time.
Okay.
If you've ever looked at it, there's doctors mainly are there to put a Band-Aid on something. They never cure you of anything except for childbirth, as my wife puts it. you know, it's the only thing that they've ever cured her of is having a baby. And that's how it worked. Well, what we're offering here is to teach you how to bring your own body back into balance so that you stop feeding cancer, so you stop feeding these sicknesses, so you stop feeding all this extra energy that's in your body things that you don't need. And when we're able to do that, it's not, we don't like to use the word healing, because then that would imply that, you know, it was done without knowledge. You know, it was miraculous. Well, as miraculous as it sounds, if a person were to just drink juice and, you know, juice their body, no matter what stage of cancer that they have, as long as they're not taking anything else in their body will naturally heal by itself. You have more of a chance of dying if you get chemo than if you were just to try to fight the cancer by yourself. And that's been the big pulling over the eyes, you know, the veil, as some like to call it, all the money. And we're trying to even the playing field out. So
it sounds like this is certainly one way of dealing with that. And I just kind of jump in a little bit on the cancer statement, because we have so many people who have cancer, and I feel like I go to a funeral about every other weekend. It really is almost that much, and probably half is from cancer. Those are just shoot from the hip senses. But so what I know for myself and for my listeners out there who have some grief going on in their lives, or what's going on, is that I always respect whatever choice people make. And I know people who do all holistic and don't make it. I know people who do all Western and don't make it. And I know people who do either the above and do make it. So, you know, it sounds like this is another way of looking at perhaps a way to be addressing that. And I appreciate your faith in this particular methodology, and just wanting to really be clear that we respect everybody's personal choices on how they work towards their healing, but we're excited that there's another possibility of being able to look at how we handle it. But we do have, you know, but to me, what feels like an alarming rate of cancer. Though they say in the United States, 1 out of 3 men are going to get it, and 1 out of 4 women are, something. So it's epidemic everywhere. So maybe anywhere feels that way. You live in Texas, maybe it's that bad. But it, for being in this little jewel of an island where it should be healthy, it is shocking how many people are in a form of disease.
Wouldn't it be nice to have statistics that say that 0 people are going to get cancer?
Well, yes, I would love that statistic.
Well, that's where we're going with this technology. That's how sure I am of it. And, you know, with this workshop and understanding of it, just in the first 5 minutes, or, well, I say 5 minutes, it'll take 5 minutes to make the solution that allows the nanocoating to grow on copper wire. And it's that nanocoating that absorbs all of that energy. And, you know, you'll learn that, and we'll be able to teach it. And we're working to try and raise funds to help broadcast it live, you know, around the world with the Keshe Foundation and all of the knowledge seekers and anybody else that's following along. Because this knowledge doesn't just belong to me, and it doesn't belong to Lita or, you know, just the listeners here. It belongs to the world.
Well, I'm glad you brought
that
up.
Healthiness, Huh?
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think then hearing that that's a goal, we could work with Hoike Television, get their really good cameras. We can get it broadcast here, and we can load it up, whether that is completely the ideal methodology, but there's also a lot of people are pretty good with live stream. But I think to be able to record the event, that's certainly a capacity that's in place and shouldn't cost money. It might take some time to edit those films down, but certainly something that let's put that in the yes pile. I like that you have curing cancer in the yes pile. Easier for me to say with Hoike, let's put getting the word out in the yes pile.
Yes, that's fantastic, and that is greatly appreciated. You know, the other aspect of it, you know, going out to my military brothers and sisters, especially those who are retired or about to retire, you know, when I left the Army and I retired, I was on 17 different medications, 17 different pill bottles, and some of those had two or three pills. In order for me to function in a quote-unquote normal lifestyle, I was given 30 milligrams of Valium every day just so that I could function, they said. And, you know, there's points where I was on morphine and Vicodin and Valium all at the same time. And it was killing my body. And I was dying inside. You know, Prozac is a very, it's got fluoride in it. So, you know, fluoride helps the brain intake aluminum, and the aluminum releases extra electrons into the brain, and that's how it gets you sick. Now, I'll explain all of that stuff during the workshop, unless you want me to go into it a little further, but I've been able to get off all of those medications, all 17 of those medications, without dying. And there was a, you know, pretty hard time in my life, you know, in my family, that medication was ruling our lives, you know, and it was allowing us or making us or whatever you want to call it to do things that we wouldn't normally do. And, you know, I think that was the hardest thing to deal with, was the, man, I can't believe I did that or allowed myself to do something like that. And it allowed you to not listen to your morals. And that's what I believe the medication is for. And this technology, this very simple of putting a nano-coated piece of wire into your drinking water, can help you with that. And it's so simple that we expect things to be so complicated in our lives that we couldn't expect just a simple wire that looks like a drinking straw to be able to heal our bodies.
And is it because it changes the pH of your body? Is it like an alkalized water or something to that effect?
Well, what happens with the nano-coated wire is that the nanomaterials they act like a sponge for the plasmatic energy that's all around us. It's trapped in the water. It's trapped in the air. It's everywhere that you can possibly imagine. If you can see it, smell it, touch it, it's plasma. Okay? And what the nano-coated wire does is it becomes a sponge for all of that energy. And when you put it in your drinking water, okay, directly in there, and you let it sit for an hour, okay, it absorbs all of that energy out of the water, and it turns it into an alkaline structured water, okay? Now, if you know, if there's people out there that understand what structured water is, if we're going to use a microwave, for instance, all right, I want you to imagine a hole the size of a thumbtack, all right? And that's, let's say, one out of trillions that are inside of your stomach, okay? And then I want you to imagine a basketball trying to fit inside of that hole that's the size of a thumbtack.
Okay.
All right? Is that an easy visual?
Yes.
It doesn't fit, right?
Right, it doesn't fit, but it's a metaphor I can understand.
When you microwave water, okay, the water molecule changes from the size of that thumbtack to the size of a basketball in relation. And so that's why you, if you were to feed a plant microwaved water, it'll die because it's unable to absorb the water. Even though you're giving it water, that molecule is the size of a basketball. It needs to be the size of a thumbtack. And so that's why microwaves are so bad. Well, when we're doing and we're dealing with structured water, okay, it changes all of the water molecules to the size of that thumbtack so that your body can absorb it 100% efficiently. And when that happens, that means that the lining of your stomach, and if it's an alkaline crystalline structure, okay, then that will change the environment of your body, the inside of your body, to an alkaline condition. And nothing in the human body can survive in an alkaline condition. And that's where we bring back balance to the body.
When you say nothing, you mean no toxicities, no things that we don't want can survive in it? I mean, you want your body to survive.
Right? Well, your body survives naturally, okay?
Okay.
You know, there are some things, okay, that survive in an alkaline environment. But your, like, sickness, diseases, things like that, genetic disorders are not fixed in this sense. They are fixed elsewhere in the plasmatic universe of things. But, like, disease, cancer, sickness, any viruses, things like that, it absorbs all of those, that energy, all of its food out of the water. And then when you drink that water, it has no food. So it just disappears. It stops growing because there's no food. And that's, you know, that's where it seems miraculous because it just disappeared. And we've been told that you have to have it cut out, or, you know, you have to go through chemo, or you have to take this pill, or you have to do this. You have to come back and spend $20,000 or $200,000. And it becomes more of an emotional burden of how am I going to pay for this? And it all boils down to money. And so if we can even the playing field out so people don't have $200,000 bills, and they can go out and, you know, maybe the neighbor's got an extra, you know, 6-inch piece of copper wire laying around, you know, that's how it works. It's really that simple. It just changes the structure of the water, and, you know, it doesn't have to be complicated to work.
Wow. All right. Well, I am really excited to learn quite a bit about this. And so you're doing this on two different 3-day weekends here in Kauai. And Lita, what dates are those that they're going to be on? Or I can pull it right in front of me if you...
Yeah, the first weekend is going to be actually Valentine's weekend. So that's going to be February the 12th through the 14th. And then the second workshop that we have is the following weekend on the 19th of February to the 21st.
Okay, and that's going to be at Kalihiwai Ridge, is that correct?
Correct, at the Rainbow Tree School.
Okay, and that's Richard. It's at his place. And Michael, it sounds like you've got all kinds of amazing things going on and lots of really good things to be learning. Were you able to hear the others pretty well, or what, did they still sound staticky?
I heard Lita pretty good there.
Okay.
I didn't hear Richard at all. I don't know if he spoke.
Okay, well, he should be connected in there for you. So, well, because of we're having a little bit of sound issues, I want to allow you a couple of main thoughts, and then I think that I will pick it up with the people here that are on Kauai. But I really look forward to meeting you when you're here, and I just want to give a plug for last week's show where we were learning different things about different kinds of meditation, and I did take the training class this week, and it is different. It is different. So that's supposed to be very good for PTSD and traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress disorder, and I'm assuming that this stuff has helped you through it. But I'm like the and rather than the or. There's this that's good for you, and this is good for you. You know, maybe you train your brain right, and you eat right, and you have good
that
energy.
That is correct. You can't drink the alkaline water and then just go out and, you know, fill up on McDonald's. You know, you still have to maintain the lifestyle in order to get healthy. You know, we'll also be teaching and utilizing the power of the ocean, okay, which seems to be pretty prevalent on a little island, you know. So we're going to teach, you know, the people of the island how they can produce the energy that they need and the healing aspects just straight from the ocean, you know, just using the ocean water. And, you know, the healing part of it has come, you know, for my wife and I, it seems like our life has been crammed. We've experienced, I don't know, I'd say about 35 years worth of marriage crammed into, you know, the last 8. And, okay, she's laughing at me because it's wrong date. I don't know. We both forgot our anniversary this year. Anyways, because we were busy. The aspects of things are very easy to follow. You do not need a technical background. You don't need to have a background in science. It's actually not preferred. You know, I would prefer people that didn't have the science backgrounds, because then I didn't have so much stuff to feel like I need to try to explain or undo, as far as an understanding goes. Because plasma is different than matter, the electricity that we use now. It's completely different. So, you know, it may seem like it's all bass ackwards, but it's how the universe operates and how things work. And those that are spiritual in nature can see it. They can see it and how the branches are formed on the trees, you know, and they follow the phi ratio, you know, of 120 degrees, and they spiral upwards. You know, these are the things that we're going to show and teach, you know, and it's not necessarily something new. It's just combining all of the information that is out there, thanks to the Internet, and bringing it together into one workshop. And it's the culmination of, you know, everybody's works out there with, you know, fractal shapes and environments and things like that, that bring it down into a neat little package that I call the Infinity Project.
That's wonderful.
And Lita picked up on that, and the Keshe Foundation has picked up on that, and we have supporters around the world. I currently teach, and it really depends on which day I teach, the amount of audience that we have. And I believe that my following is somewhere around 5,000 people on an off day. And then when we're teaching collaboratively, it's somewhere around upwards of 10,000 people around the world. You know, and America is behind on this technology. And we have a few groups that are here in America that are working, but they're so small that they feel overwhelmed. And so it's time that the American people get a taste of this and decide for themselves whether they want to be able to help themselves or if they want to continue living the way that they've been living, because we know that it hasn't been working. There is no need for war. You know, war is caused by inequality. And when everybody has everything that they need, they don't need to go to the doctor, they don't need to go and get food, they don't need to pay an electric bill because they don't have to pay anybody anything anymore. When they pay something, it's because they're choosing to.
Well,
and it's that choice that's going to empower the people.
Thank you for that.
And what we're going to teach here is individuality and trying to take care of yourself first and then take care of your neighbor.
That's wonderful. And you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. Marshall has a question for you.
I actually wanted to go back to a question that you asked earlier, Felicia, because I think it would be important for people who are considering the workshop to have their expectations right. So I didn't quite catch the answer, Mike. For those who take the workshop, will they be leaving with a device that will be able to charge a cell phone or light a light bulb or something like that?
Well, the Maghreb units, if that's your goal of building a Maghreb unit, okay, it takes 9 days to build its plasma once you build it. okay? So by the time they leave the workshop, no, they will not have a working, you know, reduction of electric bill. What is the word I'm looking here?
Can they light a light in their tent, you know? And maybe if they take the first class and you're going to be here for a couple weeks, they can see if it's working by the end of it. I get that it's about something deeper than that, but it might be also that simple.
I will be able to show proof of concept, if that's what you're looking for, which means that you'll get... I'll be able to take a nano-coated piece of wire. I'll have somebody go outside and pick a leaf off of a tree, and I'll wrap that leaf in aluminum foil, and I'll show you a voltage. And it's a DC voltage. And you can add these, what we call power beads, together, okay, to create your own car battery so that you do not need it. And you can walk away with that. From this workshop, if that's the one thing that you would like to work on, that is fine.
I just wanted
to... can be time-consuming and things like that, but that is the proof of concept to start the workshop. And then we will teach how... my goal is to build a MagGrav unit start to finish and teach everybody how to do it directly in the workshop.
Okay.
So by the time they leave, as long as they have enough of their own copper wire and their, you know, things like that for their MagGrav units, then they will be able to replicate it, take it home, and plug it in. Okay? And then be able to monitor from there. Okay? They have to follow a set of instructions because it doesn't happen overnight. Okay? Just like getting pregnant with a baby, it takes 9 months for a human. It takes 9 days for a plasma to gestate or to build, to be born. And then after 9 days, on the 10th day, it's like a newborn infant. It's got to learn everything. So when this happens, when you plug it into your house wall, it's got to learn the frequency that your house runs off of, okay? Most of the time, it's 50 or 60 hertz, okay? So it's learning that. And then you have to add a little bit more load to it, like another plug, another fan, a heater, or, you know, I don't really think you guys use heaters in Hawaii.
No.
You know, or an air conditioner, whatever it is, but you have to slowly build up to the power that you want to use for your house, and then what'll happen is it'll start to nano coat the wires in your building. And when, you know, from the very first time that you plug it in, and once all of the wires in your home have been nano-coated, you can unplug that unit now. And your home, the wiring in your home will provide the electricity or the energy that your house needs to run your lights, okay? Run your refrigerator, run your air conditioner and your heaters and all that kind of stuff without needing to be connected to the grid. Now, if you're not connected to the grid, then the plasma has to build a different way. And going out with the group out here on Kauai, they're all off-grid. And so I'm going to be teaching both aspects of the off-grid one and then plugging it in to into your house. Okay? And then we'll be able to also teach how to turn your car, no matter what year it is, into an electric hybrid hydrogen fuel cell car. Try saying that 10 times. And it's just using the same materials that we're going to extract from the ocean and utilizing them in different ways. And that's what I'm going to show at the workshop, is the different combinations that we can use these for healing, for growing food, for your car, for your boat, anything with a combustion engine. You know, all that kind of stuff. So it all feeds into itself, and it's an all-encompassing workshop, and it will deal with the spiritual side, because you have to be in touch with your emotional side in order for this to work. And, you know, that's the plasma. It speaks to the ether, I don't even know if that's the right word, the energy of your body. It speaks to that. So when you think of something and you're touching it, it can read your mind, kind of, and it'll give you what you need.
So I'm appreciating all of that. I'd like to be able, like, stay on the line, but I would like to bring in Richard and Lita, who live here, who are sort of resources on this. And Lita, you've been working on plasma energy, is that correct?
Yes, we have.
So, with a strong voice, can you share your participation in this or what you would like the listener to hear? And Mike, you can listen in and...
Sure, yeah. Mike, thank you so much. That's been amazing. I have a huge smile on my face because it's so exciting. I mean, even if you're a listener right now and you're a skeptic, it's just fun to even think about the possibilities and the potential. And so thank you. My husband and I have been on the North Shore building our own MagRav system. Again, if you're new as a listener, MagRav is magnetic and gravitational fields. And my input would be that as humanity, we have advanced to the point of understanding essentially how the universe works as these forces of magnetism and gravity. We can see that our own sun is constantly lit up as this bright star, and it's constantly spinning at a constant rate, but yet there's no motor, there's no fuel. And so how does that happen? Where is that energy coming from? And so when I say we've advanced, it's that we've understood. We've gone beyond the point where Nikola Tesla was, where he understood magnetism, and now we're understanding gravity and magnetism as two essential forces that are always partners together. And when they converge and interact, they create this plasma as an energy source, and we have been building a device to essentially harness this energy, because the energy is everywhere, and all of us can look at our solar system and know that there is another way. But yet, you know, it's just we're getting there step by step. So we've built the device. We have plugged it into our home. It is in the conditioning phase right now. And we do document everything that we do, and we put it on the internet for everyone to see. So our step by step from the beginning to this point has been documented and put on YouTube. If you go to YouTube, you can look up Lida Saffa, LEEDASAFA, and you can see all of our videos. It's been pretty exciting. And yeah, so that's what this is all about.
So I want to ask.
That's exactly how I met Lita.
Okay.
Through the YouTube.
Through the YouTube. So I'm going to look at that. So tell us what you have to say, Richard, and then I'm going to ask a very novice question.
So I found out about the Keshe Foundation probably about a month and a half ago or 2 months.
And would I spell that?
K-E-S-H-E Foundation.
Okay.
And it's a remarkable study of a man who's a remarkable man. There's a huge amount of material, a huge amount of knowledge and experience and experiments and documentation and controversy and pushing boundaries. He's basically allowed this type of energy, this type of technology, this type of consciousness now to become public, despite all opposition, despite all that we already have heard of that want to stop people from now becoming sovereign in that.
So can I ask my novice question?
Because sure.
I'm somebody who is less ethereal or more grounded or more pragmatic, real world or whatever. I'm more tied into the regular dominant culture than some of my friends that I know. This, when I think of the magnetosphere of the Earth, where we have the gravitational pull from where it's like the solid core inside a fluid core, like lava, and I mean magma, and then it goes hard again, that creates the gravitational field around the Earth, the magnetic field that's called the magnetosphere. And so when I learn about, like, pyramids and things like that, they are basically tapping that magnetosphere. Is that where it's coming from? Is that where the energy is coming from, the plasma around the Earth, or is it I mean, where do we get it?
It comes from the air that you breathe. You know, that if you hold your hand out in front of you and you spread your fingers apart, okay, and you wave your hand back and forth slowly, you can feel the air passing between your fingers. Okay?
Yep.
That air contains energy. And that's what we tap into. And the nanomaterials that we create absorb all of that energy. And the devices that we make are in infinity, which means that they're a complete circuit. And that's why we call it the Infinity Project. And what we've discovered is the act of moving this nanomaterial into a circular shape allows it to free itself. It's no longer trapped, and it allows the energy to flow freely. And that's what we're going to tap into, is that free-flowing energy once we put it into infinity or a circle. And what Lita was, you know, pointing out was the gravitational and the magnetical forces. We have a force that holds the Earth together, that if you were to kind of look at it, the Earth is kind of egg-shaped. So if we were to go to a point to point, North Pole to South Pole, okay, it's a little wider in the center, longer, from North Pole to South Pole, you got to imagine a field that is spinning in a direction, a certain direction, from north to south, okay? And then you have another field that goes from east to west, that goes around the planet, and it kind of holds it together, okay, in a neat little package. And that's where we get the shape of our planet. The tides are not caused by the moon. They're caused by the Earth breathing, okay? The expansion and the contraction of the gravitational forces on our planet actually cause the tides to go in and out, okay? It's breathing. And that's why, you know, mainstream science has tried to pull the wool over our eyes. And once you understand how your body works, you can understand how the universe works. You know, our solar system, you know, the universe is so big, so we'll come back down to our solar system, okay? We understand how the solar system works, and every star that you can see in the sky, we understand how that is created. And that's the information that we're bringing to you, so that the individual, because it is so simple, they can recreate those fields, those energy fields, and see this energy for themselves. You know, they'll be able to, once they have a true understanding, they'll be able to create light out of nothing,
so,
or seemingly nothing.
And Richard?
And
yes.
That's the cool part.
And so I'm asking, Richard, what grabbed your attention to bring Mike and Lita to your property to be sharing this information?
Because it sounds so right. It sounds so in harmony with sustainability, living in a healthy way, in a righteous way. It's contributing, I feel, to the dignity of every single human being. It's contributing to the well-being of our planet. It's contributing to the well-being of our children and all the children that come afterwards. My wife and I are very much into education, as you know. And to allow children an environment of unlimited potential excites me.
It does sound really interesting, and my pragmatic self says, hey, you know, we should call the engineers from KIUC, Kauai Island Utility Cooperative, our energy place. Be fun to bring it down to
Absolutely.
Them. I would love to show it to them because, you know, they're part of our family.
Absolutely.
And let's show them this other idea because, you know, maybe they don't want to come to our workshop, but maybe we can go down there and show them a little bit of this stuff and get their read on it because... you know, we don't want to be preaching to the choir. We want to be sharing this knowledge, this mana'o, broadly and be helping.
I think like with everything, it's very important to have a core group that is able to put it into practice and work with it and have that become a part of their lives. It's like with everything.
So they're like the beta site.
Correct. And then afterwards, I think that's extraordinary to include everyone. And it's not just this particular way. There's probably thousands of people all over the world that are at the verge or are doing incredible things for our planet. And
yes.
Michael is one.
And we need that. Michael, we really appreciate you, and we're excited that you're coming. We're getting close to wrapping up our show. Do you have, like, a two-minute final thought, and then we will let you go?
Well, I thank you guys very much for the support and for allowing me a window to be heard. Ever since my discovery with all of this, I have absolutely, I absolutely feel compelled to share and help more people. And I can't do that from my iPad sitting in my living room.
Well, we're happy to help you evangelize.
I said, hey, come to Kauai. And, you know, I was like, all right, let's go. And then they asked me how much they wanted to pay. You know, I wanted to get paid for this. And, you know, I told them I don't need to be paid. The people are putting together the money to fly me out there. And my wife, that's a vacation for us. You know, that it's that kind of thing. It's the generosity of the people loving one another. You know, and I feel the energy, I feel the love from Lita and the group over there in Kauai to come and teach, you know, and I feel a strong calling to do this. And like Richard said, it feels good, and it's a rare feeling to have in these times right now. And I'm hoping that we can pass on this energy to the people in the islands so that they can help and not have to worry about whether or not they're going to put a combat base on your island or, you know, whatever. If you can show the government that you don't need them at that particular time or for protection, then there's no need for military. And if everybody's equal, then there's no need for war.
Okay, well, thank you so much. And I have had some people ask me to have people please repeat where it's at, how much it is, and who to contact. So I'm going to tell you right now, we can't tell you how much it is, but it's not a lot. And the person asking, he can afford it. So I know that. So he's listening to me right now. There's two different weekends. It's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 12th, 13th, and 14th. And then the next week is the
19th to the 21st of February. And I also encourage people to visit the website for the workshop with all the details and information and updates. And that is www.kauaiplasmaenergyworkshop.weebly.com.
And I will put that right on my wall, and I will tag you in it, texter. And it's right behind the food forest. If people know where the food forest is in at Kalihiwai Ridge, it's just behind there. And so the person texting.
Felicia, I'd like to add too for the listeners out there that if, you know, you guys would like to kind of get a head start and maybe do some research on your own, you know, feel free to friend myself, Mike, M-I-K-E, Nashif, N-A-S-H-I-F, as in Frank, on Facebook. All of my information, all of my teachings, everything is all on there. And feel free to explore and ask questions.
They could also look at the Keshe or KesheFoundation.org. That's K-E-S-H-E Foundation.
Okay.
All of those links can also be found, yes.
Okay, Mike. So thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you, Felicia, and aloha to everybody.
Okay, aloha. And I will post this radio show on your Facebook wall soon.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay, aloha.
Look forward to meeting you.
Okay, look forward to meeting you, too. So we have Jazz with John coming up soon. We are going to hear a little bit from Amy Goodman for just a moment, and I am going to let people know we are having a KKCR, those who love KKCR, a challenge for people to donate $10 before Valentine's Day, we need to have that little extra shot of love in the arm. And I am going to leave my $10 bill right on the boss's desk as I leave here. But we're going to hear from Amy Goodman. And then we're going to come back with some thoughts from each of us. And if there is anything off this main point, too, we can shout that out also. But here's Amy.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. As a beacon of free speech, KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. KKCR brings you Hawaiian culture and music, independent voices and choices like Democracy Now!, otherwise shut out from the corporate media. During this program, please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you and become a sustaining member. Your monthly support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
And mahalo very much for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Our station that loves everyone. I just got a call, really rough call to get, but they wanted to honor, and I am sorry to report that Jumbo Fu did pass away last night. We also lost Glenn Hantz. We have so many wonderful people in our community that have made such a huge difference, and Jumbo and Glenn has helped so much. I just learned this right now about Jumbo, but wonderful, wonderful soul. So, Fu family, our hearts are with you. Let's segue off of that for a moment. Lita, what would you like to share as a final thought with the listeners?
Final thought, I would like to thank each one of our human family for being committed and dedicated to peace, to our liberation, to our sovereignty, and to our ultimate highest expression. And I think I have no doubt in that we are all going to be attracted to information, to it may be this information, it may be some other information that is going to help bring about our long-term peace, our long-term well-being, and our sovereignty. And so I thank every one of us who are committed to that, and I also thank Mr. Keshi and Mike Nashif for this development. Thank you.
Yeah, so many exciting things. And Richard?
I think I'd like to share with all those that are listening right now, just ask the question, what if? What if this is true? What if this is really a possibility in our lives and in the lives of every single human being, that we can actually live a better life? So just asking the question, what if, is an amazing thing, because we'll be supporting not only this type of thing, but all the people on earth that are working every single day for the betterment of all humanity.
Well, I certainly have that sense that we're really definitely moving into a better time. Marshall is signaling me. We have another caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, aloha, Felicia. This is Chris.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, hi. The reason I was calling specifically is I wanted to ask you, do you have the telephone number for Richard?
Richard Kraft?
Yes.
That's in here? I bet he has it.
I do. It's
639-5593. Okay, and Felicia, may I ask you another question?
Yes.
Before you're off the radio today, is it possible to say anything about the hearing tomorrow at the county building with the council to consider extending the sunset date for obtaining a building permit for the ADUs? Do you know about
Are you asking me? Say it one more time.
Sure, I'll say it one more time. Thank you. Tomorrow at 1:30 at the county...
Oh, for the public hearing time, yes?
The public hearing time. The proposal draft bill 2601, which means to amend, eliminate the sunset date for obtaining a building permit to construct an additional dwelling unit on other than residentially zoned property. So they're going to be having hearings, testimonies, and then making a decision about continuing this indefinitely.
Okay. Well, that is sounds like an important one to go. And ADU, I'm not an acronym person, means additional dwelling units.
That's correct.
And the additional dwelling units is a really important aspect that helps families be able to have a Ohana house in the back of their property. So another family member that grows up or is on their own can have a house right there.
Absolutely. That's right. That's correct.
So, and at the end of this show, we will have the county council report that John Gordon puts out for us every week, and we will be hearing that. And there's been so many important things. I just didn't go through them all. We had the Food Safety Modernization Act workshop. Next Tuesday, I'm going to have a pretty big emphasis on agriculture. I have invited some key people in who have maybe had some influence in some of the pesticide issue that happened. That's been a big concern and a big issue. We have BASF is supporting a natural farming method agriculture program through the University of Hawaii, and so there is different reactions to that. I believe that she is going to be on the show on Thursday with Jimmy Trujillo.
Okay.
We've got a lot of different topics that have been coming up. I've just been at a meeting every single day, so I could fill an entire show with outcomes of different meetings. And last night I did go to and I recorded the Charter Review Commission meeting, and the outcome of that survey, it showed 70% of the people would like to see the county council go towards districting. So that's probably going to be in the paper today. I didn't have time to read it, or maybe tomorrow. There's many issues that have happened, but if people can make it to the county council tomorrow, it starts at 8:30. Very often these topics are really addressed more fully before the 1:30 public hearing time, so when you get the best exposure to it is if you go in early. It's always more effective if you're physically there. But you can watch on kauai.gov, and you go to county council, and you click on MP3 right next to the agenda, and you can watch it live right on television. So, I mean, on your computer. So thank you.
That's true. That's true. That's a good way to see it.
Okay. So thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Felicia.
All right.
Bless your heart. Aloha.
Okay. Aloha. Marshall, I can see you have a mouth ready to speak.
Yes, and we don't have a lot of time, so it'll have to be concise. But Richard, you and I have talked about the plasma device at length, and one of the things that I thought was very interesting was your answer to my concerns about unintended consequences. Thinking it through, I think, well, what about, say, consumerism? Right now, we have a lot of plastic bottles being produced and, you know, thrown away. And if there's a check on that, it's the cost of the bottles of water. If bottles of water cost half as much, then people would buy twice as many, potentially. So if they cost half as much to produce because the energy prices to do that, if a company doesn't have to spend all that money on energy to produce and transport their product, couldn't that generate more consumerism?
The best answer will be
Lita
who will get.
Quick answer, okay, because we don't have time.
I will be quick.
Very quick.
Say, well, that's really an interesting question. I never looked at it like that. But for one of the applications, for sure, water can be purified. It can be
decontaminated, sterilized. So I don't see that people will have such a desire or need to buy bottled water. So for that specific question, these are long-term solutions.
Right. So I get that you're asking a larger question that's almost a rhetorical question. We are out of time. Because
okay.
I got the county council I got the county council report, and then it's Jazz with John. Sorry.
Okay.
We touched on it.
We touched on it, but we can ask that next week. I mean, we'll find a way to do it. Thank you, because it's a good question. Okay.
Thank you,
this has been Kauai Soapbox, Felicia and Marshall. In the studio, Richard Kraft, Lita Safa.
Yes.
Okay.
Aloha. I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of January 25th. There will be a regular council meeting at 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday, January 27th. The meeting will be in the council chambers in Lihue. Here are highlights from the agenda. Council will interview Sharon Weber for the Fire Commission and Glendon Ogami Stouffer for the Planning Commission at large. The mayor transmits for council consideration and confirmation mayor appointment of Wally Resenzis Jr. to the Board of Water Supply, and that's a term ending 12/31/2018. Also, Resolution 2016-18. The Office of the County Auditor transmits for council information the comprehensive annual financial report, single audit reports, and management advisory report for the fiscal year ending June 30, 2015. The Director of Finance transmits for council information the schedule of fund balances for the fiscal year ended June 30, 2015. The County Attorney transmits for council information quarterly report on settled claims against the County of Kauai from October 1, 2015 through December 31, 2015. Council members Chalk and Hoosier transmit for council consideration a proposed draft bill to amend the county code by adding a new section relating to an assessment cap, which implements an assessment cap for owner-occupied properties and long-term affordable rentals, and would cap any increase or decrease to real property tax assessments in any one year to not more than 3%. This is proposed draft bill number 2615 is under bills for the first reading. Council Chair Raposo requests the Office of the County Auditor, the Director of Finance, and representatives from N&K CPAs Incorporated discuss the comprehensive annual financial report, single audit reports, and management advisory report for the fiscal year ending June 30, 2015. The Fire Chief requests Council approval to accept a donation from the Kauai Lifeguard Association valued at $35,757 for various items. The Life Choices Kauai Coordinator requests Council approval to receive and spend funding from the State of Hawaii Department of Health, Alcohol and Drug Abuse Division Prevention Branch in the amount of $110,000 a year for a period of 3 years beginning April 2016 for the Substance Abuse Prevention Program Partnership for Success Grant. Under committee reports, the Public Works, Parks, and Recreation Committee has a request from Councilmember Yukimura for the Director of Parks and Recreation to provide a briefing on the Department of Parks and Recreation's maintenance plan. This was received for the record. Also received for the record was a request from Council Chair Kagawa for the county engineer to provide a briefing on the Transportation Investment Generating Economic Recovery Grant, including but not limited to the scope of each project and the specific plan to close two lanes on Rice Street in Lihue. There are three resolutions on the agenda, all related to confirming reappointments to the commissions and boards. There will be a non-public executive session. Items on the agenda include a briefing by the county attorney on a civil suit and a report on claims. If the council is not finished with this meeting by approximately 1:30 p.m., it will recess for a public hearing on Bill 2601 for an ordinance relating to additional dwelling units on other than residentially zoned lots, and Bill 2611 for an ordinance revising the amounts estimated in the bond fund, and this is the Honolulu Baseyard Fuel Tank Project for $40,000. After the public hearing, council will reconvene to complete any unfinished business. To view meetings or meeting archives, visit www.kauai.gov/webcast-meetings. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha.
And you are listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA, Kilauea. And be sure and stay tuned for Jazz with John. Great show, Felicia. Always